The list is long.
Oh, I thought of the very first one.
Yeah, I just remember.
Yeah,
I wasn't here for that one.
No, you weren't.
I wasn't here for that.
You weren't. That was fun.
Yeah, I bet. But that was really fun.
Kicking off hour two of the program. these quotes from the Georgia former Georgia quarterbacks have so many thoughts. It's hard for me to even organize them. I guess you were talking about Aaron Murray. You gave the long quote, but then this one's the one that hit me the hardest. He's talking about Jeremy Pruitt. He says, quote, "When he was at Georgia, he wasn't as respectful as I thought a defensive coordinator should be to a head coach." What? I mean, like, some of the other stuff, even the Hudson Mason stuff, I think if you wanted to try and put a soft lens on that and try and look at it with, okay, I'm going to give this guy the max benefit of the doubt here and read this a certain way. Obviously, Greg McElroy, you point out, he's just kind of saying he doesn't think Tennessee's going to be very good this year. That's just more of an opinion thing.
Yeah, he's not down on Jeremy Pruitt.
Right.
He's just saying he's inheriting a very different situation than Dan Mullen.
But Aaron Murray calling him this is a direct shot at the person Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah.
The professional person Jeremy Pruitt, saying he was disrespectful. And I don't like it. It'd be better if you had the full, you know, if you had story, context, whatever. He's not going to do that.
Here's some more of it. He says, "When I was at Georgia, the way he acted, the way he treated Coach Richt, I thought was poor. He wasn't as respectful as I thought a defensive coordinator should be. That's my thing with authority. When he's dealing with the athletic director, when he's dealing with the president, when he's dealing with the booster who has given millions of dollars, you can't go tell him to screw off. You have to take the meeting. You have to sit down with them. Yeah, I know you want to be game planning and getting ready for the game, but you're a head coach now. You have to do these other things." Those are two completely different avenues. So he's disrespectful and won't take – that's just weird. I guess maybe he thinks the any authority Jeremy Pruitt's going to have a problem with. Maybe that's the thread is Jeremy Pruitt, who – we talked about this, like a film junkie, a scheme junkie, a teach, coach, develop, train junkie. This is essentially, I'm assuming, because he doesn't really be, you know, he doesn't tie it together very well, but he's just saying Jeremy Pruitt is going to fail because he won't do the other things that you need to do as a head coach. Which, if only Jeremy Pruitt had a national championship winning coach in and around the facility that could help him with these things. If only there was a coach around who was one of the best politicians and gladhanders. If only he had somebody in his corner who could vouch for him and take those meetings for him and speak on his behalf and allow Jeremy Pruitt to be the coordinator. If only he had those things, maybe Jeremy Pruitt could be successful. But unfortunately, I can't think of anybody in Tennessee's program right now that has, you know, SEC championships or national championships or experience or knows everybody in town or knows everybody at the university, and certainly who has, you know, been working at the university for over a year, getting to know the president and is friends with the governor and probably the next governor and the next chancellor will probably have some input on who that might be. If only Jeremy Pruitt had somebody like that to kind of help him learn and then decide when to take the training wheels off, maybe he would be successful. Great point by Aaron Murray. We don't have anybody over there who's done this before at a high level.
Something tells me if Jeremy Pruitt was being disrespectful to Philip Fulmer, Philip Fulmer wouldn't be going around telling people, I thought I'd hired a good coach. Now I know I've hired a good coach. If you come into an organization, this happens often. If you come into an organization and you feel like you have some expertise, at least in your area, right, in your role. I mean, Jeremy Pruitt as the defensive coordinator at Georgia is the head man on defense. I mean, that's your job, is to be the defensive guru. He would have come into Georgia right off of national championships or a national championship already at Florida State. If you come into a situation and you've been put in charge of an entire half of the team under a CEO head coach, and they're not doing things that you think are best, there's always going to be some like, hey, I know you guys did this way last year or maybe even 4 years. I think we'd be better if we do it this way. There's always going to be some rub there as you try and integrate a person who's an expert in their field in that area. And, I mean, wouldn't you say Jeremy Pruitt's more of a defensive expert than Mark Richt? I mean, that wasn't...
Without question.
Now, if they didn't handle that dynamic very well of one of authority or whatever, maybe, you know, that's on both of them and Richt as the head coach. But my initial thought here is Aaron Murray, you're the guy that's going to say someone's disrespectful and then it goes to the other comments about being too blunt. Why did Georgia not win big from 2012 to 2014? You know why? Because they were too soft. Aaron Murray, soft. Does he hold a lot of statistics, a lot of records and all that stuff? Yeah. Light up the bad teams. Get in the big games. Can't win them. Too soft. Tweeting out pictures about how scary other defensive ends are in the SEC.
It was Clowney. It was pretty scary.
After you get just blasted in the biggest game of your season. I mean, this is the stretch where they were in the, you know, Outback, Capital One, Gator, Belk, Tax Slayer. I mean, those were the bowl games that ultimately got Mark Richt fired. Like, Aaron Murray has always been this kind of soft, pretty boy quarterback that couldn't take the heat in the biggest moment. And ultimately, those types of finishes in the SEC are the reasons why nice guy Mark Richt didn't cut it. So, yeah, Hudson Mason, maybe Pruitt is kind of blunt. Maybe that's what your soft-ass quarterback room needed to win a national championship or an SEC championship. Because with nice guy Helen Hunt, Mark Richt, it just didn't work. Sure, there'll be a big learning curve for Jeremy Pruitt as the head coach, obviously. But him being too blunt,
not a problem,
in the quarterback room or with the quarterback recruit, that ain't going to be one of the reasons he fails. Not at all.
This is, you know, it's funny. And I was talking to a friend of mine yesterday who follows Georgia football, big Georgia fan, follows it very closely, lived and worked in Atlanta, so he knows some things about the program, right? I don't want to say he's some kind of insider, but I think he's pretty well connected. Basically, Todd Grantham was fired at Georgia because their defense was not very good. They bring in Jeremy Pruitt, who, as you mentioned, had just won a national championship at Florida State. He had previously won a national championship, maybe more than one, at Alabama. I mean, think about that real quick. By the way, just a quick tangent. Nick Saban has Jeremy Pruitt, loses Jeremy Pruitt. Nick Saban. And as soon as it's possible again, hires Jeremy Pruitt back. Do you think there's a coach on this planet who would tolerate insubordination less than Nick Saban? The guy was ready to draw and quarter Lane Kiffin on the sideline of like every game. Do we really think if Jeremy Pruitt was so awful and terrible that Nick Saban would jump at the opportunity to hire him back? Just think about that. Just chew on that for a little bit while I go on my spiel here. So Mark Richt hires Jeremy Pruitt. This is a guy who's been at Alabama, who's been at Florida State, who's won national championships, right? Who sees – people tend to think Jimbo Fisher's a really good coach, who has now seen Alabama do it. I think we all agree here that Nick Saban, whatever the formula is, pretty good at figuring it out year in and year out. We agree? Pretty good formula they've got going on at Alabama.
Mm-hmm. 5 titles in 9 years.
Not bad. Not bad at all. then goes to Florida State, wins a national championship, right, with a defense that year that probably didn't get as much credit as they deserved because Jameis Winston was so fantastic. Also, that's his first year with that defense, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong there. Was that not his first year at Florida State? Or was that his second year at Florida State?
He was there for 14 and 15.
Okay. So I'd have to go back and look at which year. So it may have been his second year. Wins another national championship. Mark Richt says, wow, this guy wins everywhere he goes. The defenses are great everywhere he goes. Let's check. Yep. When I talk to recruits, they all say how great Jeremy Pruitt is. Sounds like he can recruit. Yeah, we got to get this guy in here.
Pruitt was only at Florida State for 2013.
It was only the year they won the national championship.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Georgia 14.
Georgia 14.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. I thought so, but I wasn't sure. So he was there 1 year, wins a national championship. Georgia says, man, we got to get this guy. If you go from... if you're a CEO, or even if you're not, if you're the desk manager of the Ritz-Carlton, right? And then you become the and you win, you know, whatever the awards are. I have no idea. And then you become the desk manager of so-and-so, and it's another really nice hotel. And you win an award in your first year because you just came in there and everything worked tight. And then you take a raise to go to a place, and you got to fix it up a little bit, and you get there. Is it not your job to say, you know, when I was here, we did this. When I was there, we did this. If we could do those things here, I think we can get to that level of success. I've seen it before. I've been a part of it. I think there are some things that need changing. For example, Georgia, if I'm not mistaken, was beaten by Vanderbilt to a 100-yard indoor practice facility. They had a 25-yard, maybe 30. I can't remember. I think it was 20 in the end zone when Jeremy Pruitt was there. And there's a story that apparently one day after practice, they're walking off the field. It's pouring rain. I think Mark Richt may have called practice off early because it was raining so bad and lightning. And apparently Jeremy Pruitt catches him on their way into the locker room, pulls him aside and says, "What the hell are we doing here? You're the University of Georgia. You're in one of the best recruiting hotbeds in the world. You have a great alumni base. You've got great, you know, opportunity here. How have you been here, Mark Richt?" At that point, I guess that would be 12 years. Maybe longer than that. You've been here 13 years and you don't have a 100-yard indoor practice facility. So if it's lightning, we just cancel practice. That's not good enough. It has to be better. Things like that. Jeremy Pruitt kind of going through the program on different levels. Very blunt, because that's just the kind of guy he is. This is not working. This could be better. Here's how. This could be better. Here's how. I've seen it. I guess some people didn't like that. Jeremy Pruitt leaves in 2015. And all of a sudden, they go a different direction. The athletic director had been there. I can't help but think Jeremy Pruitt probably circumvented the chain of command a couple of times and said, we gotta update some things. We need a new mentality here. Like, this isn't working. We got to do something to restart the fire if you want to get things going. The new athletic director very quickly, in a 10-win season, mind you, fires Mark Richt. Paul Feinbaum said yesterday, "I've talked to a lot of people at Georgia, and they give Jeremy Pruitt a lot of credit for changing the mindset, the direction, and the focus of the Georgia program in his 2 short years there, because he came in and said, your potential is a 100, and you are operating well below that. And all it is effort. All you got to do is turn up the give a damn, and we can fix this thing. Instead of sitting down saying, football's played outside, we don't need an indoor practice facility, you walk up to one donor and say, we need $50 million from you, from him, we're going to build this thing, and we're going to have the best facility ever so that we can keep these recruits from Atlanta, from South Georgia, from the Valdosta area, from Northern Florida. Why are we behind in anything if we're trying to compete at an SEC and national level? Yeah, you guys can win your 8-9 because it's that easy here. You don't have to have everything that some of these other schools have to win 8-9, maybe even 10-11 games, and occasionally cycle up and get to an SEC championship. But if you want to do it consistently, it's going to take more effort. It's going to take more of a commitment, and I'm not seeing that here. We got to get this turned around. So if Aaron Murray doesn't like that, okay, but your team played for a national championship last year. Your team was a freak throw by a freshman in overtime away from probably winning the damn thing. How close did you get under Mark Richt? Didn't get that close.
Nope.
So you can hate Jeremy Pruitt, but based on what I've heard, it was Jeremy Pruitt that came in and said, this, and this needs to be different, and if it is, I think we can start working in the right direction. We've asked, man, he sure is changing a lot over there. Redid the weight room, hired a new, you know, all these new coaches, new mentality, changing the, like, maybe the guy is a great CEO, and you didn't think so because he wasn't the CEO at the time. Maybe he saw it more clearly than you did, Aaron Murray. Great tweet from Troy just now. He said, do you think Nick Saban and Bill Belichick don't have problems with authority? Do you think they like being told what to do? Doubt it. He said they probably tolerate authority, but have we seen Bill Belichick be a slave to Robert Kraft? I don't think so. Does Nick Saban not get anything and everything he's wanted at Alabama since he got there? Certainly looks like it. Are there exceptions to the rule? Sure, but those two guys, kind of the best in the business, and I don't think they love having a boss, frankly.
Well, your point about Jeremy Pruitt going back to work for Nick Saban and never having, you know, no one ever mentioning this type of issue there is the if you're Jeremy Pruitt and you're at Georgia and you feel like you're working harder than Mark Richt, isn't that wouldn't that be the problem? I mean, if like when you work for Nick Saban, you know that when you're working, he's working. Like that's pretty much the Nick Saban rule.
Yep.
Like I'm working more than anyone else. And we've talked about it. Just because you're working hard doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be successful. But there has to be a certain respect level up the food chain of authority. And you know what Aaron Murray's talking about just makes absolutely no sense. I read David Ubin's part two of the Jeremy Pruitt thing, and it was basically just about him watching the Two A Days high school all access TV show and how Jeremy Pruitt was on there. And it came across like, yeah, he's blunt, he's gonna use foul language at every turn. He didn't want his family to watch it. Jeremy Pruitt's never watched it. He didn't want the cameras there. And it was all about the football, and it was very blunt. And Coach Propst talked about how Jeremy Pruitt, you know, holds his players at a very high accountability level and, you know, ask a lot of them, but that, you know, at the end of the day, those players really respect him for it. And, you know, one of our listeners tweeted in earlier that it was Brian. Notice that all the guys complaining about Pruitt from Georgia are all offensive guys. They're soft quarterback guys that, you know. Even the Hudson Mason comments, I'm not sure that those are as negative as I first thought because I kind of was looping it all in together, you know, with Aaron Murray. He said on Pruitt, he's going to recruit well, but the position you have to get right in the SEC is the quarterback position. Pruitt is a grinder. When he got to Georgia, I was taken aback by his bluntness. I don't necessarily think that Pruitt won't recruit the quarterback position or won't handle the quarterback position well. I think what he's saying is, you know, Pruitt's going to recruit well at other positions. Mm-hmm. The big question mark will be how fast can they get good at quarterback? I think you can look at that quote with a little bit softer lens and to say, when I met a guy, he was blunter than I thought he was. I was taken aback by how blunt he was. That's not really a bad thing. I think it came across worse yesterday because Aaron Murray had attacked
Pruitt. Yeah, I think when those were kind of released side by side, they kind of got swirled together a little bit. I'd agree with you on that. But, I mean, it's just a difference of style, right, and of opinion. Like, some guys would never play for Nick Saban, but they'd line up to play for Mark Richt. Some guys maybe would play for either, depending on the situation. And then there are other guys who are like, no, I need a guy like Nick Saban to get the best out of me. And I'm not saying necessarily that college football is a business decision, but for some guys it is. And to operate at the highest level, I just feel like that's what you want, as long as everything is reined in. I mean, you don't want things going crazy and, you know, a Baylor situation where we'll just cover everything up. As long as we're winning, it doesn't matter. But I think you want that primary focus and drive. And if you're Jeremy Pruitt, that's the kind of players you're going to attract. Jimbo Fisher, I don't know that I would put him on the same shelf, but he is a workaholic. I mean, the guy walks 100 miles an hour, talks even faster, always working, always scheming, always recruiting. He recruited very well at Florida State. So he's clearly one of those guys who is tireless as well. Mark Richt, I mean, it was just a little different, right? Great guy. Good offensive mind, but probably was maybe more content, right? Probably didn't feel like he had as much to prove because it wasn't the end-all be-all to his existence.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to jump into someone's, you know, personal beliefs. Mark Richt openly and publicly had a much higher calling than being a football coach at the University of Georgia. That was a vessel for him to do what he felt he was called to. Nick Saban seems like all he wants to do is win a bunch of damn football games. Bill Belichick seems like his primary focus on this earth is to just win a bunch of football games. Maybe there's a balance, but clearly one works a little better than the other. I mean, those are the two most successful coaches maybe ever in their respective levels of football. And they're, I mean, did we discuss that article that came out a while back? I mean, they're like best friends. They have like leapfrogged each other and helped each other out and worked with each other, and they communicate, and they're just the same type of person. So again, I'm not saying one is necessarily better than the other. Maybe it is, though, if you're talking about strictly winning. The question is, can you balance it, right? Can you? And I guess those guys are doing a good enough job. And I'm not knocking Mark Richt. I mean, that's one hell of a guy. He's a great football coach. He's doing a great job at Miami. I think he will do a great job at Miami. But I think there is something different that gives guys like Nick Saban, like Bill Belichick, and hopefully like Jeremy Pruitt, a drive to do the extra, the more. I know it was a famous moment every summer, right, when Mark Richt would cancel practice and they'd go to the pool and he'd do the backflip off the high dive, and it was, hey guys, you've been working real hard, let's go to the pool today and have fun. Like, that's good, right? That gives you a good feeling. Like, oh, what a nice coach to do that. Coaches aren't like that. You know who would never do that? Nick Saban. Nick Saban will be like, we're going to go practice, and then we're going to go to a team movie afterwards. That's our team function. It's just, it's one practice. But it's just, that's the difference. It's just a little bit of an edge that I guess Nick Saban, Jeremy Pruitt, Bill Belichick, man, when you're working, as you said, we're working. That's it. And whatever we need to succeed at the highest level, we're going to get it, and we're going to do it. And I think when Jeremy Pruitt got to Georgia, he didn't see that. And it probably, because of the type of person he is, it probably frustrated him a little bit.
Well, and to tie this back in, I mean, this as the SEC kind of turns here, the previous defensive coordinator at Georgia, Todd Grantham, is now at Florida. That leads into what Greg McElroy said about Florida's upcoming trip to Neyland Stadium. We'll hit that on the flip side. Stick with us right here on Fox Sports Knoxville. Violence and then a lot of work to be done. No place to hang out or washing. And then I can't blame all on this segment's brought to you by Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. There's six area locations and then all the ones across the Southeast. And right now you can download the AMP app for free. Give it a test drive as well. It's AMP.
Promo code July1, JULY1.
Oh, there you go.
Is that the numeral or O-N-E?
The numeral. Thank you just for clarifying. Checking. That is a
good
catch.
You spelled July and said one. I assumed it was the numeral. Just wanted to be sure.
No, that's a good call.
There you go. It's Gold's Gym, the official gym of Three and Out. Greg McElroy was talking yesterday. Obviously, it was Dan Mullen Day at SEC Media Days, because he makes everything about himself. McElroy said Florida, on talking about Florida's road trip to Tennessee, quote, at Tennessee, meaning the game, is interesting just because it's always an interesting game. Florida is better than Tennessee and should win that game convincingly. What I find strange is we talked about it last segment. Todd Grantham was the defensive coordinator at Georgia. He was there for four seasons, I believe. I have that right. He left. He was fired and replaced with Jeremy Pruitt. He then went to Louisville and then worked his way back into the SEC. He was at Louisville from 14 to 16, then to Mississippi State last year with Dan Mullen. Their defense last year was pretty good, Mississippi State. But again, it's kind of that grading on a curve, right? You know, pretty good for Mississippi State. And now he's gone with Dan Mullen to Florida. So, at least on the defensive side of the ball, you would think that Tennessee's, if you're kind of thinking college football matrix style here, that Tennessee has better coaching on the defensive side of the ball right now, total, than Florida.
Yeah. I would say Tennessee defensive side of the ball is top. I guess a couple of those guys have some stuff to prove, but considering Pruitt's your head coach, top at least top four defensive coaching staff? At least top four?
In the league.
Right? I'd say behind Alabama for sure. Possibly, probably behind Georgia. I don't know if LSU's defensive coaching or just talent, but they're usually pretty good. Those are the ones that immediately came to mind.
Where would you have South Carolina at on that?
I mean, I think Muschamp's good. The other guys I'm not so sure about. We don't need to get into the weeds on that. I'm just saying, yes, I think Tennessee's defensive staff is good.
On the offensive side, everyone is giving, you know, Dan Mullen all this credit, and Florida all this credit for having Dan Mullen, and you've got McElroy saying, like, oh, yeah, they should win this game convincingly. Now, it's hard because, again, we talked about this yesterday, no one has talent ranked. No one's really ranked talent for the current teams.
Nothing's up to date.
Right. So the big question mark, and this is the one everyone's having to ask probably at Florida as well as, you know, definitely here, is how much better will some of these players who were high-ranked guys as a recruit but never materialized into high-ranked players under the previous coaching staff, how much better will they be in 1 year? And obviously the Florida-Tennessee game is the fourth game of the schedule, so that's even the first, you know, third of the season for both these teams. Like, how does that play out? I guess I'm still a little – I still have some questions about why people like McElroy just assume that Florida should win the game convincingly. Because he's saying it could get interesting because it just always is, but that on paper
– I don't know how you could assume that.
I don't either.
Based on what we've seen last year, what teams return, what teams added – Maybe I'm way, way off. I don't know.
When we looked at
I don't look at that game and say, oh, yeah, really, that's going to be almost impossible to win. Am I saying Tennessee couldn't get waxed? Absolutely not. I honestly, this year, I don't – predicting individual games and what could happen, I don't know if there's ever been a wider gap in my confidence, like what, like which side I would lean on per game. Like Tennessee will probably beat somebody that I didn't expect them to beat, and then frankly they'll probably pull a Orgeron and lose to a Troy. Like something like that will happen. And I think that's just new team, first coach, a lot of new players. You're going to have highs and you're going to have lows. Tennessee will probably lay an egg in one game and then they'll probably play pretty well in another.
I'm trying to think back at a time just looking at Tennessee versus Florida where there's been more uncertainty surrounding both teams going into a game. I can't think of one in at least the last I don't even know when.
I mean, Florida does have. I'm looking at their receiving core. For this year, they obviously have you know, like if Van Jefferson gets cleared, which I'm assuming he will. I don't. Mullen didn't say anything about him yesterday. I don't believe so. Did he answer that question?
He did say leaving Mississippi State was an easy decision.
Yeah, that was strange.
He does go on the road to play at Mississippi State this year.
He also made sure to remind everybody that no coach has ever played his former team on the road in the next year. Very, very Butch Jonesy statement. Thank you to Jordan Oliver for pointing that out. He gave the, you know, no coach has ever had to go back to their former team in the SEC the next year and play them on the road.
Oh, yeah, because that's so hard. I mean, coaches have done that a lot a few years apart. It's just never been the year right after.
Yeah, but no one's ever done it.
Yeah. Jeez Louise. But, I mean, you know, the skill guys for Florida do look pretty good on paper. I mean, they still have, you know, Tyree Cleveland and some of these other receivers that were highly recruited players. Obviously, the whole system changes now. At running back, they actually, Dan Mullen benefits because Jordan Scarlett sat out, you know, like fresh legs, ready to go. You know, like the running back position actually looks better for Florida because of the credit card scandal they had. I mean, they still have at least a couple, at least one really good offensive lineman. I'm not sure about the rest. The defense is where people have the bigger question marks, especially switching to the Todd Grantham 3-4. But to me, I mean, it's still, and I guess people just give Dan Mullen the credit. They're giving him unseen credit for making these quarterbacks at least be passable, right? They're saying the skill guys are okay. The defense is kind of a question mark, but Dan Mullen will make sure that either Felipe Franks, Kyle Trask, or maybe even ultimately Emory Jones will be pretty good at quarterback. But man, if they're not, like if you roll. If Felipe Franks kind of in the first real game on the in first road game for those guys kind of reverts back to his like stare down one guy and then try and throw it through the wall to him, puts his head down and starts running around when he gets pressured. I don't know how McElroy can say they should win the game convincingly. I still don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, again, I realize that the matrix as far as current roster not up to date, but Tennessee and Florida pretty close.
Yeah, they're just
when
same.
You and now granted again it doesn't take attrition and all those other things, but it doesn't seem like the these two programs as far as the roster are light years apart.
Well, how much does Keller Chris help Tennessee? Madre London help? None of these guys are counted for Tennessee.
Sure. And then Will Greer's helping Florida, but he plays for West Virginia now.
Right. And Van Jefferson will be a help to Florida, even though
if he gets cleared.
If he's cleared.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. It just seems as if, I mean, they won four games last year, too. You know? Like, they were 4-7. But for some reason, the focus was on Tennessee's, and maybe it rightfully should have been, considering the coaching search debacle. But it's like all of a sudden Florida gets the pass. Like they're just, oh, well, they hired Dan Mullen, so they're going to be just fine. And I just don't know that that's true. I don't know that the problems at Florida are solved with Dan Mullen as your head coach. Now, I guess if you're a Florida fan and you're trying to talk yourself into it, Dan Mullen does have success taking less talented rosters and playing pretty well against good teams. So there's that. But it's his first year. How long didn't it take him a while to kind of get Mississippi State grooving a little bit? And even then, I mean, he had the one good year, and then they've been what, like 7, 8, 9 wins. Other than that, I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe the Dan Mullen experiment will work well. But it seems as if he was only really really good when he had a really really good quarterback, and I don't think he has one right now. Maybe Emory Jones is the second coming. I have no idea. But from what I've seen of that roster, I think they've got Felipe Franks, who is bad. Big arm, so maybe he can improve. Task or Trask or whatever it is, I haven't seen. But so maybe he's good. I don't know. I don't know how any of those guys are world beaters. Because like Dan Mullen gets a lot of credit for being a quarterback whisperer. Like, I could have whispered to Tim Tebow and won a lot of games at Florida. I could have whispered to Dak Prescott and won a lot of games at Mississippi State. I don't know that I'm ready to say, man, he gets the best out of quarterbacks all the time. No, he got the best out of two of the best quarterbacks to ever play in this league that did fit his style. So give him, you know, credit for recruiting him. I don't know. Seems like if you've got a big guy who's very, very durable and can throw it a little bit, Dan Mullen's your guy. Emory Jones, not big, probably not very durable. And if you're a quarterback for Dan Mullen, you're going to get hit a ton. So I guess we will see.
I have his records from Mississippi State.
Please enlighten me.
In 2009, his first season, they went 5-7. Following year, 9-4.
Pretty good.
In 2011, 7-6. 2012, 8-5. 2013, 7-6. 2014, his only 10-win season, he went 10-3 that year. They lost in the Orange Bowl.
Weren't they 9-0 that year? 8-0?
That was the year they got to number one in the country.
So then they won two of their last five?
2015, 9-4, 2016, 6-7, and 2017, 8-4.
What was 2016?
6-7.
I think they were only 5-0 in 2014, but they beat LSU, A&M, and Auburn, who were all in the top 10 in three straight weeks.
And in 2016, actually, they were one of the teams that was 5-7 that got a bowl game, and they won their bowl.
All right. Look, it's data. Like, it's more data than I have on Jeremy Pruitt, but I we saw what Ole Miss did under Hugh Freeze. Like, that to me is a cycle up, right? Like, Hugh Freeze won. Did he win 10 games three times? Like, that to me was like, okay, this guy, yeah, he's a phony. Yeah, he's a faker. He's a lying, cheating scumbag. But this guy can coach football. Yeah, he paid all these guys to get here, but man, he got him there, and now he's winning. Am I wrong there, Davey? What did Hugh Freeze do at Ole Miss?
His first season at Ole Miss was 2012. He went 7-6, followed by 8-5, 9-4, 10-3, and then 5-7 in 2016. So each year he got better until his last season by one game.
5-7. What happened that last year? Did I miss something?
All the sanctions coming out? Or, I mean, all
was
the,
that
the
year?
Debacles.
Did they have a quarterback get hurt, too, maybe?
No, I don't remember.
Okay. I don't know. So, Hugh Freeze, in half the time, had as many 10-win seasons as Dan Mullen? I don't know.
I think Dan Mullen is a very solid football coach.
He got to play Kentucky every year at Mississippi State.
I just don't know.
Like, guaranteed win.
I mean, obviously, when he was at Florida as the coordinator, you know, they won big. As you said, they had the best players too. So it's hard to grade that. But it's unfair to not say that, because we give Jeremy Pruitt credit for winning at Alabama and Florida State, you know, with the best players too. So, I mean, to me, Dan Mullen's just proved that he's not awful as a head coach. That's really the big difference between him and Jeremy Pruitt. They've both proven that they're very good coordinators. Dan Mullen has proven he can put together an offense with a very clear identity, and it can be successful in the SEC. Jeremy Pruitt's done the same thing on the defensive side. And then the big difference is Dan Mullen went to Mississippi State, and for at least whatever the expectations were, he met or exceeded them most of the time, and people are giving him, you know, big credit for that. I don't know if Dan Mullen's just a solid football coach, or does he have what it takes to be, you know, can he win at Florida the way Urban Meyer did? Much credit does he you know, I don't think so.
Do you know how much pressure there is on you as the head coach at Mississippi State? None.
Whatever the bottom of the scale is.
None.
Zilch. Nil.
None. Like, don't go 3-9. Like, that's your pressure meter. I don't know if Dan Mullen, I mean, the more I think about it, man, he does seem to have a lot of Butch Jones in him. Like, remember when Butch sat on the throne of Nike, Game of Jones?
Yeah.
Remember when he wore the Jordans around the complex, and he's like, oh, yeah, these, like, fancy car, right?
Mm-hmm.
Dan Mullen, like, always tweeting videos of himself, like, wakeboarding and always making sure he's got cool shoes and wants to be cool and hip, wants it all to look really good. What Jones had for him is that when he got to the SEC, no one really knew who he was, right? The high school footprint, this was new, so you could maybe fool some people. I wonder if that's why Dan Mullen is struggling on the recruiting trail a little bit right now, because everyone's like, oh, no, we dealt with this guy when he was at Mississippi State. He's awful. Former players coming out and saying, doesn't like the old guy, like the new guy, though. That is just weird. Maybe we dodged a bullet. I'm not saying we didn't get hit by another one with Pruitt. I have no idea. But maybe Dan Mullen is the egg about to crack at Florida. I don't know. It's obviously very early. He hasn't done anything yet. But, man, I'm starting to just see some comparisons here. Like, who was I don't even know who I would compare him to as far as another coach. He's just, I don't know.
You want to talk about the pressure at Florida? I was at the Swamp. I've got a buddy, Florida alum. I was at the Swamp the night that they had that one quarterback that wasn't a very good runner, and it was the Urban Meyer downfall year. And South Carolina beats them in what was their last SEC game. It decided the SEC East that year for a year where it was the Cam Newton season, where you know they rolled and were undefeated. And their quarterback threw that pass. They got batted up in the air, and then he was laying on his back like 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage, and he caught it like an absolute moron. As we're leaving the stadium, Florida fans everywhere are talking about how they've just got to fire Urban Meyer.
Yep.
He had just won them national championship. Like, that's the difference between Starkville and Gainesville.
Exactly.
We need to fire Urban Meyer.
And what I'm saying is, you know, looking at what he did at Mississippi State, I don't know that I would consider Dan Mullen a fast starter. I don't know. McElwain did not recruit particularly well, frankly. And I'm just wondering if things go bad at all early for Dan Mullen, he's not going to – like, you can fool some people in Starkville and say, we got this figured out. Next year we'll be better. Trust us. In Florida, they just stopped showing up.
Yeah.
And the administration is forced to make a decision. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but like you don't get to go 7-6, 8-4, and then 5-7 again in Florida and keep your job. Like you don't get that comeback year if you're Dan Mullen. Like that's the thing about him being at Florida. Like Jeremy Pruitt might be allowed that here, maybe, because of everything that's gone on. You do not get to step backwards at Florida and keep your job the way Dan Mullen has done a couple of times at Mississippi State. That does not exist in Gainesville.
Think about the endings of Florida coaches all the way back. Like, Steve Spurrier loses one game to Tennessee, and it's like, I'm just done here.
But he understood it.
Yeah.
He understood it. And I'll never forget when he hit the podium immediately after the game. Keep in mind, they're about to go to a BCS bowl. They have had a really good season. They had one loss. Who did they lose to that year before? Did they lose to Auburn maybe? I want to say maybe it was a really windy game at Auburn, so Grossman couldn't throw or something like that. He hit the podium after either 9-2 or 10-2 regular season and said, well, our season's over, because he got it. I don't think Dan Mullen's going to say that. I think Dan Mullen's going to Butch Jones that thing up and say, well, we're getting better, and, you know, I got these Jordans on, and we're going in the right direction, and we're going to be back at him. Like, that doesn't work in Gainesville. Starkville, sure. Starkville's like, wow, we have a guy who isn't embarrassing. It doesn't suck. Well, he's embarrassing. He just doesn't suck. Not sucking in Florida is not good enough. And I don't know that Dan Mullen is good enough to survive. And I don't know, frankly, that he inherits a team that's good enough or he's recruiting good enough to get to where he needs to be. I mean, think of Jim McElwain. He won the East 2 years in a row. Got fired before the season ended in year three.
We have people in the media in Knoxville basically saying, oh, yeah, Butch Jones, right trajectory, doing great things, getting better and better. He was performing worse than a guy that they just fired at Florida just after, you know. It's look at every single ending. Spurrier in his last 2 years won 10 games both seasons.
When they were playing 11 a year.
And obviously, I mean, he chose to leave, but he knew. I mean, it's exactly what you said. Obviously, there's Ron Zook, which, you know, I'm surprised they even gave him, let him start the third year after going 8-5 twice. And then Urban Meyer wins the national championship. Then the next year wins the Sugar Bowl and goes 13-1. And then one season of 8-5 and health problems.
Think of that.
Done.
The pressure,
I can't handle
the
it.
Pressure of Florida broke Urban Meyer. And yeah. The guy had banked a national champ. Two? Did he
two.
Win two?
Two.
He had banked two national championships.
In the previous 4 years.
I mean, like, I know earlier we talked about Belichick and Saban. I don't know if he's on that level, but Urban has that same type of intensity, right? That same type of, like, Urban got to the point where it's like, I'm doing everything I possibly can, and I'm winning 8 games. Like, I can't do this. This is, like, something has to change. I can't do this. Because not only did he want to win and couldn't, but then everyone in Florida's like, fire him. You just lost to South Carolina. Fire his ass.
Yeah. They were 8-0.
It's insane down there.
They were 8-0 in the SEC in 2009, 13-1 overall. 2010, you know, they go 4-4 in conference. They're 8-5 overall, and that's it. Pressure's too much. Done. Going to go to do TV and then obviously back to Ohio State. Will Muschamp, year two. They go 11-2, 7-1, tie for first in the division. And, you know, one bad year. I mean, he was gone after 2013. It didn't matter what he did in his final season. One bad year for Muschamp, done. McElwain wins 10 games, SEC East champs. Wins 9 games, SEC East champs. And the pressure, I would argue the pressure is what drove Florida just to be 4-7 last year. I mean, it's a pressure cooker.
And that was a
pressure.
Well, and that was a really big pressure year for McElwain. Right? Because it was, okay, you've won the East, but we're still not sure that you're the guy. So I think McElwain understood, like, dang, this is kind of a make-or-break year. I'm going to have another new quarterback. Yeah, we really do need to win some of this stuff. And they completely folded. And then you got McElwain saying he's got death threats. Right? I mean, remember that? Like, that's what started the we might fire Jim McElwain with cause, is because he said he got death threats, or players got threats, and he did not report them. And by rule and by, you know, the litigation of his contract, like, that it has to happen. So, like, they were looking for any excuse. Granted, they'd also just hired Steve Strickland, and they were – not Steve Strickland. What is it? Scott Strickland. They were looking for any reason, I think, Strickland was to get his guy in there. He had come from Mississippi State. I think he wanted them all. But I'm just saying, like, if you can win two national championships and crack under the pressure at Florida, I don't know how Dan Mullen survives. And Urban Meyer, not a very emotional guy, I don't think. Right, Urban Meyer, we're always doing this, you know. we're all about business. We're always coaching. We're always teaching. Go Ohio State, blah, 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 blah. You got crazy Dan Mullen? Who's worried so much about his image and what people think about him? Gotta wear Jordans. Gotta show all the kids I'm cool and I can wakeboard. Imagine when people start talking bad about him. I'll give Florida credit. This is why they cycle coaches, and this is why they're able to hit on an Urban Meyer. But, yeesh. I just don't see how this works for Dan Mullen. I've convinced myself. Dan Mullen. Dan Mullen, flop. Flop and a half at Florida. Dan Mullen, if he had come to Tennessee, might have had success because I think he's a slow builder. And I think eventually he would have been able to recruit here pretty well. They need it too fast in Florida. They need it right now. They're winning addicts. And if you don't have it, they're not going to sit around and hang out and talk to you and say, oh, how's your brother? How's your family? You don't have what they want. They're on to the next guy. Period. That's just the way it is. Tennessee, we're the opposite. We're the, oh, it was so hard for you. Man, it's okay. You know what? You tried. You did a good job. You gave it a good effort. You've said some things that sounded okay. I know you've embarrassed us a whole bunch and aren't very good at what you do and have been caught lying to us multiple times, but you know what? It's fine. We're the enablers.
We are.
We're the enablers. Florida, they're just like, oh, you don't have my stuff?
Mullen,
on to the next one.
Mullen knows that. He said yesterday, quote, Florida's a high-pressure job, but I love that about it. I have extremely high expectations for myself and the program. That's pressure I wanted. He also, though, talked about how the goal this season is to play in Atlanta you know, for the SEC.
I'll give him credit. Butch never said that.
But the main goal is to build a program that becomes a consistent championship contender. So I feel like he's already laying the groundwork so that this year, if Georgia beats his ass and they finish, you know, and maybe South Carolina too, third or fourth, he can say, well, this, you know, we're laying the foundation. Remember, we don't want to necessarily win too fast. We want to make sure that we're a consistent championship contender.
That is the perfect. Look, I said we wanted to win championships.
Yep.
But I also said we wanted to build a program. And then he can be, you know, he'll be able to say, and I think we did that in year one. I think we did lay the foundation for a great program for years to come.
Winning is fragile.
It sounds like he's ready for a brick-by-brick slogan down there in Gainesville. We can only be so lucky up here in Knoxville. We'll come back and kick off hour three of the program next. Stick with us right here, Fox Sports Knoxville.